Hour 2 of Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Nick Keyser filling in for Michelle Knezovic. This hour, we're going to be getting into some Preds talk. We're going to get into our best bets. But to kick off the 10 o'clock hour, final hour of the show, I want to talk a little SEC football because the addition of Oklahoma and Texas has kind of caused a lot of controversy with SEC fans and how they're feeling about scheduling and rivalries and how all this stuff is going to be played out. So, you know, this upcoming football season is going to be the final year of the 14-team format. It's going to be moving to 16-team with the addition of those two Big 12 schools. So the SEC dropped their schedule about all just the opponents, not necessarily of how it's going to be, you know, lined up. And a lot of people are upset with only having 8 conference games and how it's going to shake things up and rivalries are going to be missed out on. But what I kind of gathered from this initial release and just of the opponents, and they wanted to make sure that every single team in the SEC got to play either Oklahoma or Texas in the first year so that everybody got to welcome in the newcomers, at least one of them. I was actually very surprised with how well they created the opponent structure for the first year. You know, I was looking at certain rivalries. LSU-Alabama is a big one that I've liked to watch every single year that I didn't know was going to be protected. A lot of people here, Tennessee-Alabama. Auburn-Georgia, was that still going to be a thing? And when I saw all of those games were still in the schedule for 2024, I was like, okay, that's a sigh of relief for me. That at least in year one, they're going to keep all the historic rivalries. Some of the minor ones have been left out, but all the historic ones that are the big ones that you think about when you think about SEC football were protected. So your initial thoughts when you saw the SEC come out with
Well, and I grew up watching SEC. I know that you grew up in Louisville. I know that you probably pay attention to the SEC somewhat relatively well because it's pretty close. But I think for me, I thought that the schedule when it came out, I thought it was pretty fun to look at because when you think about now for Vanderbilt's sake, oh my gosh, 2024 is going to be rough here in Nashville.
Oh yeah,
I think.
Unless you're a season ticket holder, you're gonna get to see some fun teams rolling.
And if you don't want to go, you can sell them for a damn good profit. But look, I really think at the very end of the day, I do like the structure that they're moving to. Now, one thing I would love to see one day, Junie, is them do 10 games. I really would like to see that. And another part of it, too, that I paid more attention to as we discussed throughout the week was, okay, now when you think about scheduling for the future, would you like it to be tough? Because we do a segment called Would You Rather? And one of the questions this week that we kind of discussed was, okay, would you rather have a tougher schedule in conference play and throughout the season too. So just an overall tougher schedule in order for you to build that resume for the college football playoffs, or would you kind of just rather stick to what's been going on, have some cupcake games, you know, play a Western maybe, because I know Western's not now, they're going to be better one day, hopefully, but all bias aside there, you have to think about, okay, you know, I mean, one team I thought about was like, okay, Clemson had a lot of cupcake games last year. You know, Ohio State had a couple of interesting games last year too. But I just asked myself, I'd rather it be kind of tougher all around, to be honest with you. And that's the question I asked myself immediately after looking at it. So
my thing is about this is that I think they made it work for this first year just because they knew that if they skipped out on some of these rivalries, that the backlash would have been tremendous. I think that the SEC needs to move to at least 9 conference games.
Yeah, absolutely.
They need to come up with a format to where some of these games that fan bases and traditions and alumni have grown up with. Because, you know, for me, like you had mentioned, I grew up in Louisville. I grew up, you know, really following the Big East, and when they moved over to the ACC, that was more or less what I kept up with. But again, you know, Kentucky is also, you know, big rival of Louisville. And so I'd always root against Kentucky and actively root for every, you know, SEC school that against them. So I did grow up, you know, following the SEC, but some of the rivalries that I necessarily never got to really experience as a child, like Tennessee-Alabama, I did not realize how big of a rivalry that was until I moved closer here to Tennessee. And then I had a fraternity brother in college who was a diehard Auburn football fan.
Yep.
And hearing about, you know, his experience growing up, and he lived in Georgia, which Auburn in geographical relativity to this is only 15 minutes from the Georgia border.
Yeah.
And so that has been such a huge rivalry, and it's the oldest rivalry in the South. And I just I can't – the SEC and its history of football is just so rich that taking away some of these games just so, you know, Vanderbilt or Kentucky or Missouri can throw in another cupcake game and get an Appalachian State or a Western Kentucky or an MTSU and play some of these guys, I think that there's enough room in your schedule to be able to have that. I mean, how many cupcake schedule games do you need? And especially with the NCAA moving to the 12-team playoff format, there's going to be a little bit more room for error. So if you're going to do that and you're going to diminish some of the regular season, you might as well put better matchups on there.
Yes.
And as the SEC expands, so should the amount of conference games as well. And these historic rivalries that have been going on, some of which for 100 years, need to be protected.
They really do. And I know another thing, too. Now, this is more of a joking thing that I would like to say, but now Chris Sanders may not like the tougher schedule and silly underdog picks because he had some way out there picks this year. But
well, that's Chris Sanders and silly underdogs every single year.
Oh, absolutely. But I think in general, it would be beneficial for programs to recognize – you know what? I don't want to throw NIL into this, but it does shift my focus to kind of think this way. If it's becoming more like professional sports, we need to treat it like it.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, I think in terms of thinking, okay, you know what? Like, Tennessee, you're going to play like UTEP or something or whatever it is. It's like, come on. Like, we need to have a longer schedule against teams that match the same kind of firepower, or at least should. Because, look, I've looked over contracts. When I worked at the Herald, Junie, I looked over some game contracts with a lot of these bigger schools for Western. So I have this perspective of when they approach a big school, and one of them for WKU at the time that I was there, now big – and my point of view here is much different than some other places like in Ohio State with some of our interns that are here. But look, when I read some of those contracts, it's more or less like Western was looking at Indiana, okay? They were saying, hey, we want to do three games, and they listed out, hey, here's what we're going to pay for each of these games. And also, it's a beneficiary for Western because it's exposure. We both know it's a small school playing them on – you know, CBS on a Saturday is huge.
It is.
And so when you're these smaller schools, it's going to help. I get that. But also, I think there needs to be a fine line. And I think we also need to think about conference play is so huge. Now, I get like maybe doing the first three games non-conference or something like that. I would rather be kind of like basketball where like, okay, we've got these non-conference games to kind of start our schedule. Then it kind of transitions into, oh, it's all conference play.
Well,
I don't know.
What I hate is you know, watching Alabama throughout the season, and they have this huge matchup against LSU, and they, you know, they beat LSU, and then the following week, and it's like, you know, we're maybe 9-10 games into the season, they go on and play a Mercer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like right before they play the Iron Bowl. And I'm like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? You know, I just think that you don't need four non-conference games. I think, like you had said, if you do a – because I think in the SEC they have to play a non-conference Power 5 school.
Yeah, I think so.
And you do that to kick off week one. Week two, cupcake game. Week three, you know, maybe a more competitive mid-major. Like your, you know, like I said, Appalachian State has been pretty good. Western has been pretty good. A team like that. And then you go 9 straight conference schedules. I just think when we look at 2025, all the rivalries that they actually got to pin together because they're wanting to go on this rotation. Everybody plays everybody every couple years. And I get that. You want all the SEC teams to play each other. But you've got to add that extra game in there to be able to hold these rivals. Listen, this sport is all about tradition, and tradition is important to these fan bases, these alumni, the former players, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that if you take away some of these big games yearly, you're stripping this new generation of college students, SEC fans, of what it all means and what brought us to this point. Because if there's anything close to an NFL Sunday, it's SEC football.
Exactly.
And you just can't wreck tradition, in my opinion, for TV and TV money and what some of these, you know, lower end schools in the SEC want just so that they can stay relative.
Exactly.
In my opinion, the tradition and the rivalries are more important to the product than just, you know, getting some of these lower tier SEC schools to 6 wins so that they can participate in a bowl that nobody cares about.
Absolutely. I want to see Lane Kiffin get peppered with things by fans still. Now, I know it wasn't a great look for Tennessee, but I want to see more drama like that. I want to see the competitiveness when you go up against a fellow SEC school. I want to see that. He got mustard thrown at him and everything. I was at that game. That's why I'm using it as an example. But look, I want to see stuff like that as a fan that gets to go to games or as a media member even too.
Yeah.
There are so many more storylines that you get out of things like this, Junie. So I think it's a very good topic. It's a lot of things are good food for thought currently. And the schedule, I think, is in a good creative space currently. And I think we'll still see it change at some point. But I think it's definitely opening up a lot more conversations right now.
Absolutely. Good. Nick Kieser, good stuff. Talking about the SEC and basically what they need to do, because the history of some of these rivalries go back for 100 years, and I think the SEC would be hurting themselves in this new format of trying to change things. But coming up next, Kieser wants to get into the Nashville Predators. There have been so many storylines with draft picks, with potential trades, how they can go out and get that big boy forward that can really change this entire rebuild. But before that, tune in to Nashville Sounds Baseball tonight at 6:35 p.m. on 94.9 The Fan. The Nashville Sounds take on the Gwinnett Stripers, AAA affiliate of the Atlanta Braves. Sounds Baseball is on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Preds coming up next. Potential moves on UC Soros and in the NHL draft. You're listening to Michelle and Junie here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
From what you know, your interpretation of the situation and what you know about the situation, what do you think is a quote-unquote good enough offer for the Predators and UC Soros?
Carolyn, I don't know if I can say exactly, but put it this way. I think it's more likely than not that Soros is back with the Predators. I do. I think if he gets traded, then you're going to look at the deal and you're going to say, holy smokes. Like, that's the only way I see it happening. I think the Kings called them at the deadline to see what was available there. Obviously, it didn't happen. And I don't think that's going to change unless they get something that blows them off their feet. I really don't. I would be surprised if it's anything less than that.
That was Elliot Friedman on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace last week. With all the speculations going into this offseason and the direction of the Nashville Predators about all-pro goaltender UC Soros. And I feel like this is going to be a question that is posed until we get an answer about what the plan is at the future of goaltending for the Preds with Askarov being with the Admirals, UC playing at such a high level. Eventually, they're going to have to make a decision between the two. This isn't a Pekka Rinne situation where Pekka was aging out and it just came about naturally and perfectly because of their age difference. Eventually, this organization is going to have to make a choice of goaltender. And right now, with all the speculation about the Soros trade, Nick, what have you been hearing and what are your thoughts on all of these rumors?
So I do think it's interesting that pretty recently that there was a pretty reliable source from what I have gathered as well that we had kind of figured out And when I mean me, it's Nashville Hockey Now for me, reporting wise on the Predators currently, that the LA Kings, they had previously had something on the table prior to the trade deadline. That was affirmative. And I mean, Elliot Friedman talked a lot about that too, how that was a possibility. And so now, with it being the asking price of a couple of first round picks and possibly more, that's intriguing to me from LA's standpoint. So, and it would not be, they don't have, I believe they do not have their current first round selection. So it would have to be down the line, obviously. It would probably be next year's and the year after that, whatever that might be. So there was that buzz going around for quite a little bit of time. And now the Kings, they do have Phoenix Copley as their goaltender. He kind of came on the scene for them this year. They traded away Jonathan Quick, who just won the Stanley Cup, with the Vegas Golden Knights as basically their fifth string goaltender, because they had a lot of injured pieces. But he was backing up Adin Hill in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. So Quick wins the Stanley Cup and was traded for I believe it was a conditional first-round pick that is not going to be a first-round pick, and a third-round pick in next year's draft. And then the Kings also moved off of Cal Peterson as well most recently. So the Kings, they were more or less interested in saying, oh, maybe UC could be our starter. But I think that ship has sailed because they feel confident with Phoenix Copley. So that's more or less interesting to me. Now, here's a different can of worms I do want to open really quickly on the subject is, so the Admirals, everyone's favorite team in town, obviously. Now, they had Devin Cooley down there this year with Yaroslav Askarov. So the main concern with me here is his agent told me he's going to test free agency. I don't see him coming back to the Predators because of what they told me was Devin wants to be a number two or a number three in an organization at the least, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case in Nashville. He's got Askarov in front of him, and the Preds re-signed Lankinen. Pretty clear and cut dry for me. The only way Devin's coming back is if the Predators made a trade or if something significant happened and they told him, hey, here's our plan. We'd like to bring you back for some security, and you would get more playing time.
Yeah.
Because Askarov is going to have more playing time this next year for sure. Now, he had his moments in the playoffs. Now, the other thing for me, the reason why it becomes a little dicey that no one really pays any attention to, they have a guy named Tomáš Vomáka that he's a goaltender from Czechia that the Preds drafted a few years ago. Now, he's not anything special, but he's still a guy that can be a depth goaltender for you. And he told me personally that he's going home this summer and in anticipation of not getting a professional contract here. So if you ask me, I don't think that he's going to be returning to the Predators organization either, which leaves another goaltender spot essentially open for sure behind Askarov. Who that is, I don't think it really matters in terms of the long-term plan necessarily.
Yeah.
Because they could fill that via draft or free agency pretty quickly. It could be one of Barry's latest picks in the draft this year.
And it doesn't have to be
absolutely
a premier pick either. You're talking about the fourth goaltender for the Preds.
Right.
Going to be backing up Askarov in Milwaukee, so it's not like you're going to be wasting a ton on that. But I guess my point in all of this is – number one, do you see Saros' trade value being any higher than it is right now? And do you suspect that there would actually be a suitor that would be willing to give up enough to be able to make a move like this? Because, like you said, you know, Askarov likely is not ready for NHL play, even as a backup goaltender this upcoming season. We saw the woes in the playoffs. There's things that have got to be adjusted there. Some of those mental errors, it just cannot happen at this level because it will cost your team tremendously. But when I look at the Preds right now and where they are in the transition, do you think it would be wise to move off them? And if so, do you think that now has to be the time because his value won't be any higher than
I do agree with our colleague Adam Vingan that now is the best time to possibly do it as far as value goes. Now, I really feel like this is what Barry's going to be thinking, and I can't wait to get to know him and ask him some of these questions at some point in time whenever that's right. But I think the way that he could be thinking right now is, I need to get a feel for some of these guys that have made a difference here, and I don't think he's going to be as quick to pull the trigger on some players. Now, he's proven that he's already challenging Ryan Johansson to be a much better player next year, so that tells me he's looking at a lot of other key guys on the roster that he needs to see more out of, because we're coming off of a year where two guys scored 40 goals and they didn't do anything this year. So that's interesting to me that he needs to challenge some of these players. And I think Brunette's going to challenge his team for sure. And I think there's a lot of people that are going to want to play for him, whereas maybe with Hines, it was kind of a tired message, possibly. Now, they could have liked Hines, but I'm just saying, I think playing for Brunette might be something different, and I think that might change Saros' thinking long-term. Now, you're asking me, and I'm taking the long way around it, kind of, but I would rather, if they're going to pull a trigger on him, get the right deal now. But if you don't feel like you're ready to do it, don't do it. You know what you're getting from him. Look, he led the NHL in goals save above expected for a reason. He also was expected to give up the most goals in the NHL this year based on how bad the Preds played at times. So when I'm thinking to myself how star-studded he truly is, for a bang and a buck, by the way, he's getting $5 million a year currently.
Yeah, for the next 2 years.
Yes. So you have to consider, if that's what he's going to keep putting out for your team, even if they had a down year this past year, and then the Predators were sellers at the trade deadline, look, and he wasn't part of it, by the way, that tells me that they feel confident that they can keep him. Now, I'm wondering from Saros's health-wise as well, because this wasn't talked about very much, but as a goaltender, when you do that locker cleaning out, you usually get some clarification on some things too. And, you know, everyone battles, you know, hey, like my body's feeling this way. And, you know, goaltenders and their hips and their legs, like I have several goaltending friends that have played at the highest level, and it's very difficult on them no matter how long you play for. Pekka had to have hip replacement, or he had to have surgery, and he still played really well. Now, for Saros, I feel like he's still recovering, and that's why last year he had to have surgery before the Colorado series, and we all know how that went. But I think this is the best UC Saros you're going to see in his career, and if it's the right team, you're going to look for a big fish that offers a lot. But the thing is, people have traded a lot lately, and Saros has not been part of it. So the thing for me is, it's probably going to be a little bit before you see a trade, to be honest with you.
Okay, so I get your perspective on what you think the Preds will do, but I want your – right before we got to go to break here, what do you think they should do? Do you think that they should look to trade? If they can get the right return, do you think they should at least ponder and look for a suitor this offseason?
I don't think they should do it this offseason. Now, I agree with the idea of it for sure. I don't think they should do it. I like the idea. I don't think they should make the trade, because I want them to have a clearer picture that they showcase for us this October. I'd like to see what Barry does in the draft, what trades he makes there possibly, who he drafts there as well. That's a longer-term project for sure. I want to see if he has any big phone calls and makes some hard trades. Because, look, there's definitely the possibility that he makes a couple trades. And so I'd like to see what happens before we consider the future of UC Saros ultimately. So
615-737-1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We want your opinions on the Nashville Predators, what they are doing in this pivotal offseason. But coming up next, we're going to start talking about the NHL draft that will be right here in Nashville in about 2 weeks. What should the Preds do? Should they try and trade their assets? Should they try and move up? And if they stay put, who can be there for the taking? You're listening to Michelle and Junie with Nick Kieser in for Michelle Knezvik here on 102.5 and 106.3. The game. Michelle and Junie here live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. Last segment, we were talking about UC Saros and potential trades and how that could impact this offseason, which is a bit of a transition year for the Nashville Predators. You know, they're unloading some players this past offseason. You know, Tanner Janot Ekholm, Mikhail Granlund, and all those guys. And so we're talking about the direction of the franchise. And they get all of this draft capital. And so if not a UC Soros trade, which I think would be huge, highly unlikely move by this team, but what could be more likely is what they do at the NHL draft. And the NHL draft is only a couple weeks away, going to be right here in Nashville, Tennessee at Bridgestone Arena. And so with all the draft capital that this team has, 13 total picks this year?
13.
In 2023?
The most that they've ever had. Since the draft was last in Nashville. They also had 13 picks in 2003 as well.
Well, they just like to build all of it up and make it suspenseful and have a lot of energy at draft time.
At least
especially
David
when
Poyle
it's right
did.
Here in the Music City. Yeah. So with the draft being here and coming up, do you see them, you know, moving up in the draft? Do you see them trading some of their assets to go and get a big-time player to help on one of the top two lines? What do you think the Preds' plan is going to be for this year's draft? What do you think they're going
to
do?
I think it would be intriguing to see them move up from 15, although I think that they're pretty content at 15, but I think that Barry's definitely going to try to move up possibly because he does have two first-round picks.
Yes.
So you have to keep that in mind.
And they have, what is it, Edmonton's from this year?
Right. So you're picking at 15 because that's where the Predators were at after the lottery, which didn't really change anything. And the Predators are also going to be picking, I want to double-check, yes, they're picking at 24. So that was part of the Matthias Ekholm trade. The Preds get a draft pick, and they also got a prospect from it, Reed Schaefer, who, by the way, depending on, and this is one comp that you see years down the line, is the guy better that they draft after this trade, at this spot? Or is it the guy that you acquired in the trade that you didn't draft, but the team drafted a year ago? Because the Oilers drafted Reed Schaefer a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
He is a really good prospect. He played really well in the WHL this year. And I find it hysterical that on NHL.com, because I'm just going quick to double-check these picks, but at the projection, I didn't really care so much for the projection here, Junie, but I think it's funny. This is true. So Oliver Bonk is the projected number 24 pick for the Nashville Predators. He's a defenseman out of London. He just played in the OHL. And his dad is Radek Bonk, and Radek Bonk used to play for the Preds. Now, you may not know who that is, but he was here for a short time. He was a fun forward to watch. He played for the Ottawa Senators, most notably.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of cool to see that, hey, this guy's son might be an appealing pick on defense for the Predators. So, and realistically, I think that if they do stand pat, I think they go with the forward. I think one guy that has been floated around for me that I've kind of liked looking at him, his name is Braden Jager, I think is how you say his name, or Jager. I don't think it's Jager. I think it's Jager.
Yager's a good name to have in the
Yager
NHL.
Yager's a good name. You know that being a Penguins fan, I'm sure. But look, I think with Barry saying also, too, that he wants to take a swing at stuff this year, he's challenging his scouting department to take a swing at some players this year. That tells me they obviously have a high thinking of the draft class in general. But also, if they do move up, they could be put in position to go get themselves a pretty decent winger, at a good cost. I think the most obvious thing for me is I think they're trying to find their next number one centerman, because I want to remind our listeners too, and this is something that David Poyle said when they acquired him. When they got Ryan Johansson, he said, we've never had a number one centerman ever. We've had guys that have done a very good job. Well done job by some of those guys that were there in the meantime. Now that Johansson's older, now that we want to see more out of him this year, I don't think he's going to be the number one center out of training camp. I'm just going to tell you that right now, unless we see things before our eyes at some point, how good of a step that maybe he's taken forward. I don't think he is the number one center. And I think the way that the Preds look at it is this is our opportunity to find, it's not going to be a franchise player. It's not. He could be possibly one day if he grows into it, but if they find a centerman that they really, really like and they can trade up to go get him because they feel like that their guy is there, it's going to be kind of like what the Titans did with Peter Skoronski. Are they going to stay there and they know which guy that they're going to get? because they tried to move up, and that was all the speculation there. They might go get a quarterback, or, hey, they might stand pat and get a guy for the trenches. I think for the Preds, if they stand pat, they know what they're going to get already. But if they feel like their guy is up there that maybe could be even better, look, they might do it. I think that they really could. Now, Ryan Leonard is another guy, too, for me, that played with the U.S. development team this year. He could be something special for the Predators if they go grab him. I don't know for certain, but that's something to think about. But I think the Preds are thinking centerman here in the first round. With the second pick, if they want to be balanced, a Junie, I'd like to see them get a defenseman. If it is this Bonk kid, that would be great.
And that's what I was thinking about this. You know, a lot of talk has been about the offensive end. You know, they go out and get an offensive-minded coach. Barry Trotz has been on record saying they want to play faster. They want to score more. They want to put more towards, you know, an offensive system into which the NHL is moving more towards. And I agree with that, but I would also look at the back end of this team as well. You know, the blue line isn't that deep.
And no.
When you talk about, you know, their guys, you know, Ryan McDonough is going to be another year older. Roman Josi, who dealt with injury at the tail end of last year, is dealing with injury. And Tyson Barrie, you know, like, is he going to, you know, be a part of this team in the long run?
Yeah.
I don't know. And so we also need to think about, you know, the blue line as well and where they're going to go with this. So that's what kind of makes me think if they stay put, mm-hmm. that they might go defenseman rather than try and go with, you know, the forward that everybody is anticipating. But a question that I want to know, because you've been covering hockey for a while. You know this game much better than I do. When it comes to making a trade up, say they want to trade from 15 into the top 10 to go out and get this centerman that they feel could be a first line guy, a franchise player.
Mm-hmm.
What is like the cost for moving up for something like that?
Oh my gosh. So if you move up, here's what I would do. If it was my trade package, I'm no GM. I've had some friends be like, hey, you'd be a good GM. But that's like high school. Like,
of course.
Friends.
You know,
but,
playing NHL but, franchise mode.
Right.
No, I get it.
Exactly.
Get it.
Now, I think if I was going to move up, the way I would do it is I would probably utilize number 15, and I would probably utilize a prospect. Who that would be, I don't know. Trade Reed Schaefer again because you don't have much out of him. I don't know. Or you could trade Fyodor Svechkov. I know that they just signed him to the ELC, but that probably won't happen. But trade someone. Now, if you move up, I think it would take those two things plus a roster player. I really think it would. Possibly. I think it varies on which team it is. Now, if it's a team like the Sharks going up number 4, mm-hmm. which I don't think the Sharks are going to trade number 4 because that's a new GM there. They want their guy there at 4. But if they move up to the top 5, it would take all three of those pieces. For sure. Now, on defense, before we go to break, because I want to touch on this, there's a big question mark because the Preds did sign Fabro. It's a prove-it deal. It's a one-year deal.
Yeah, $2.5 million.
Carrier and his camp, they don't want to announce anything because I've asked a couple times. They don't want to announce anything. They don't want to talk about it till it's done. But it sounds to me like if you're thinking of who's going to arbitration for the Preds, it could be Carrier.
Yeah.
So I think that you can get him on a 1 or 2 year deal, and that's a good replacement for now. You can keep him for whatever the cost is. So, and you also have to vary in too. How do they feel about some of their defensive prospects? Stastny played. You also have the foot kid. Now, I don't know how confident they feel about him. He didn't play that well. He just didn't look very comfortable yet. I know it was via trade, and he has to get used to it. I just didn't mm-hmm. see enough from him to stay here in Nashville personally.
Livingstone's
another one, too, that I've talked about, and I don't know too much about him yet because he's out of college. He's a 24-year-old kid. But the thing is, he's filled out. We know what we're getting from him. What's good about him is he drives the puck up on offense every now and then. That's how he got his first career NHL point, was driving up and created a goal. But look, the Preds on defense, you have to consider, what are they going to do? Because there's still a couple of holes in my eyes. After I played defense most of my life, I consider they have a lot of question marks there. And if they want to still be as good as what it was when Barry was here, because Barry was very, very prideful on his defensive style, I think he still wants to retain that. But how much? Because Josi came off of a 90-point-something season, 98 points, 2 seasons ago. So you have a guy that can carry your offense. I think they're looking for guys that can be shut down defensemen. I think Livingstone and Stastny do it just as good. I think Adam Willsby does it okay. He's not great at it. But if they have to move on from someone soon, I think they know what they're going to do. They do a fine job with it. I'm not going to be too worried about it, to be honest with you, Junie. But in the draft, I answered your question about moving up. I would say it would take those three things to move up if it is in the top five or maybe even higher. Maybe takes two of those things. But ultimately, I think they're very happy with the fact that they have seven picks within the first 100 picks of the draft. It's a very, very loaded draft system for the Predators.
It will definitely be interesting. The last thing I want to ask you about this offseason, and I think that not a lot of people are touching about it. I was talking to Willie about this yesterday when I was engineering their show out at the NFL Alumni Golf Scramble, and that was, do you think that they buy out Ryan Johansson this offseason?
Oh, my God. I stirred up Pred's Twitter yesterday with this, and look, just to give it perspective, I wasn't doing it because I'm saying buy him out.
Yeah.
No, I don't think they buy him out this year.
You don't
year.
Think so?
No,
Willie thought the same thing.
No. It's so detrimental if you do it now.
Yeah.
And also, too, you want to see what he does this coming fall and at training camp. I think it's kind of dumb. I don't think you would see it, because I'm just going to lay it out really quickly here before we go to break and go over some of our best bets and talk about Nashville SC. But I'm going to lay this out here. So what the buyout would look like. It would span four seasons. It would cost $10.6 million, and the Predators would save only $5.3 million during those years if we did buy him
out.
It's
a lot of dead money.
Exactly.
It's a lot of dead money.
I'd rather eat it for now, to be honest with you. I've had a bunch of people quote tweet it and reply back, and it's majority no, and that's pretty obvious.
And we'll have to talk about this more on another day, but it'll just be really interesting to see, you know, how they kind of formulate these lines with so many young players that came on this season that you know really performed at a high level at the center position. They're going to have to make some tough choices and maybe some positional adjustments.
This
might be
the most entertaining training camp in Preds history, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially with all the guys that you know we talked about that you know played for the Admirals and you know helped this team have a shot at the tail end of last year, you know, seeing who makes the team, seeing who has played where, who's moved around where. It will be very interesting to see how this whole offseason plays out. I think it's one of the more intriguing offseasons for the Nashville Predators in a long time. But like you touched on, coming up next, we are going to be getting into our best bets of the weekend. Tennessee and LSU playing at the College World Series out in Omaha. Nashville SC has got a home game tonight. We're going to give you some more individual picks as well. You are listening to Michelle and Junie with Nick Kieser in for Michelle Knezovic here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Visit thegamenashville.com/events to get a special ticket link for the Nashville Sounds today versus the Gwinnett Stripers. For every ticket purchased through this link, the Sounds will donate a portion of the proceeds to the Boys and Girls Club of Middle Tennessee. Listen, David James, you made up for it, okay? The song coming into the previous segment, I was not happy with. I wanted a certain something, and he wouldn't give it to me.
Yeah,
but you made it up. You made it up with the Big and Rich. I will tell you that. I love this album.
Okay, but you don't want David to shake it for you, so let's not keep playing.
Oh, shut up.
Either way, David James, you're back. You're back in my good column now with that intro music.
Brought to you by Conference USA.
But either way,
True Blue.
Either way, definitely check out that ticket link for the Nashville Predators. You know, we had a good 615 day with them on Thursday. Had the kids come out, do some inflatables, play some wiffle ball, tour the stadium. So they're going to be donating some proceeds only through that special link. Mm-hmm. So go to thegamenashville.com/events.
Check
and
it
we
out.
Will have it. We'll have that there for you. But it is the final segment of today's show, and you know what time it is, guys.
Oh,
it is time to bring out the money. We are going to get started with Tennessee versus LSU at the College World Series out in Omaha. And I'm pulling it up right now. I had it. I just want to make sure the line didn't change. But we got Tennessee, LSU. LSU is 1.5 run favorites, and the over-under is 9 total runs.
Wow. So, 9 runs?
Yes, 9 runs. I am going to go with LSU, and I'm going to take the points. And I'm also going to go with the under in this game. Listen, what is this? What's the pitcher named? Paul Skinsneeze? I don't know the guy's name.
I skinned my knee trying to say his name.
What's his name? LSU fan over here. What's
Skinsneeze?
Is his name Skinsneeze?
I think so. I think it's said a little differently because I heard Caroline say it yesterday.
Yeah, and Caroline's a listen. I'll be the first person to admit I am not a big college baseball fan. Sure. I've been starting to get into it this year now that Tennessee and Vandy are both really good programs. But
now,
apparently this pitcher for LSU is really
he's a
good.
Dog.
It's good. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be him and Dylan Cruz pick 1 and 2 of the MLB draft. Dylan Cruz going number one. He's going to the Pittsburgh Pirates. But regardless, I think this kid pitching. In a one game, you know, because obviously the way that it's structured in Omaha, the winner of this game is going to go to the winner bracket, loser is going to go to the loser's bracket. I like LSU, and I like them big tonight.
Okay.
And so with this guy, Skinnies, pitching, if that's even his name. I think it's just knees, maybe.
I don't know.
Skinnies. Paul Skinnies.
Yeah. Yeah.
But with Skinnies, I think that he's going to shut down a lot of what Tennessee's got going on. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a pitching battle, more or less a defensive bout. But I think LSU, with who they got in their hitting lineup, I just think they're going to be too much for Tennessee.
I also kind of I tend to agree that it will be a hit fest. So I will take the over in the game for sure. Now, as far as who I will take in the game, I do think Tennessee rides the momentum that they're on. I think that they'd take the game.
Really?
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, they have been on a tear hitting lately. And I think, too, their pitching staff is set up well. I do think I lean more toward Tennessee's pitching staff than I do LSU. Now, LSU's got some pretty decent guys on that team, but I think Dollander's playing really well for the Vols, too.
He's not starting tonight, though.
He's not starting tonight. And I think
it's Lindsey.
I think that they are anticipating things going well. So we'll see what they do. But my gut tells me I feel like Tennessee is going to take this game.
Okay. So. All right. David, your pick.
You already know. It's go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Go Tigers. It's easy. I don't know. I just think LSU has the best pitcher in all of college baseball that'll be starting tonight. And I think that they have probably the most talented roster in the nation. So I'm taking LSU. Okay. A game here locally tonight. Nashville SC takes on St. Louis City SC. St. Louis City SC has 29 points. Nashville SC has 32 points. And right now, St. Louis is number one in the West. So a big-time matchup for Major League Soccer here in town. I'm going to go with the hot hand. I know they tied last game, but I think here at home, offensively, they just bring a little bit more. Give me Nashville SC, and anytime goal scorer for Hani Mukhtar, because he seems to be doing that at least once a game.
Yeah, I would also agree. I'm going to stick to what I said on Take It to the Bank on Friday with Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace at 145. I'm going to say Nashville SC wins. Now, what I said on Take It to the Bank was Nashville SC wins in any fashion. So that's what I'm going to go with. I think that they take them, and I think it's going to be a really good game. It could be a 1-0 game. It could be a 2-1 game for sure. But I do like Nashville SC winning this game tonight. I think they're going to be doing just fine. I think Joe says no quite a bit, but I think Nashville SC does their very best against St. Louis. David?
It's going to be a Nashville party.
Easy enough. All right, individual picks. All right, everybody come up with an individual pick for me. I'm going with my Pittsburgh Pirates. They just got embarrassed at Wrigley Field, okay? They had a drunk driving bus driver, and I think that that's going to wake the team up. I think they're going to come out. The Milwaukee Brewers are only a half game behind them. Right now the Pirates are barely holding on to the NL Central. They are going to win this game, take the Pirates -1.5, and smash the over. smash the over. The over-under is 8.5 runs. They are easily going to get over 8.5 runs today. Take the Pirates, take the over. Pittsburgh wins big, and they are going to take a further lead in the NL Central.
Okay.
Your individual pick, Keyser.
So, just because of the reverse boycott going on, I'm going to go over to the A's, and the Sounds were previously affiliated with them before they went back, I think, to the Rangers, and then now they're back with the Brewers. So, I'm going to go over here to Oakland because they've got a pretty good game tonight. I don't know if they're still doing the reverse boycott or not. I would have to imagine.
It might have been a one-game thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Oakland's got to be sad, dude. Losing the Warriors, the Raiders, and now you're losing your last pro team. Oh, it's got to hurt.
It's definitely not fun. But they are taking on the Philadelphia Phillies. So, I mean, look, they have the over set at 9 and the under. I'm like, it's probably going to be the under. So I'm going to go with that. But I am going to take the Phillies in the matchup. I know that Oakland's been hot lately, but I think it's all coming crashing down for them some. But I wanted to touch on mainly that storyline for sure. But the A's are definitely a team to watch right now. But David Janes is going to lead off the end of our show with his own pick. What you got?
All right, guys, listen here. I'm a Cardinals fan. And for us Cardinals fans out here, we are suffering right now. We stink.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, cheeks. Just absolute cheeks. But so are the New York Mets. They are
the Mets, baby.
They suck. But tonight they play, and this will be the night Wainwright will prove me right, and he will win this game. Get it over, and just the Cardinals win. That's all I gotta say.
Over on the 9 runs, and Cardinals win. Are you taking?
Yes.
Okay. Cardinals win. They're +1.5 on the road at Citi Field against the New York Mets. I wouldn't take that. I think the Cardinals are cheeks.
Well, the Mets.
Yeah. Well, David has his Wainwright to be right, so I do understand that for sure. So, but you and Frazier have that in common. You guys like the Cardinals, so I kind of like the little theme going on behind
big
the glass.
Big Lou guys.
Too many St. Louis fans around
oh,
here.
This is Nashville, Tennessee.
Either way, that's a wrap. Take the picks. Win some money this weekend. Brought to you by Superbook Sports. That is all the time that we have today. Nick Keyser filling in for Michelle. This has been the Michelle and Junior Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.